Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. Too often we hold fast to the clichés of our forebears. We subject all facts to a prefabricated set of interpretations. We enjoy the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought. It was John F. Kennedy who famously said this in a speech at Yale University in 1962. And his words still ring true today, reflecting our urgent need for critical thinking. There are numerous definitions of critical thinking, depending on the context, but I'd like to use the one provided by Robert Ennis, Emeritus Professor at the University of Illinois, whose focus was on critical thinking in education. In a paper of 2013, he wrote, "Critical thinking is reasonable, reflective thinking focused on deciding what to believe or do." In his streamlined conception of critical thinking, Ennis outlined the qualities a critical thinker has. These include being open-minded, trying to be well-informed, judging well the credibility of sources, judging well the quality of an argument, asking appropriate clarifying questions, formulating plausible hypotheses, defining terms in a way appropriate for the context, and drawing conclusions when justified, but carefully. And in today's digital world, these qualities are more necessary than ever. Every time we log onto the internet, we're bombarded with information, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff and mis- and disinformation from the truth. When we open our social media accounts, we're confronted with a seemingly endless stream of appeals, people vying for our attention, posts to be liked or retweeted, things to be read and commented on, photos to be forwarded. Yet each time we encounter new information, we have to decide whether it's worth reading, consuming, or passing on. We need to think about who wrote it or produced it, and most importantly, why. In addition, we have to learn to process information quickly and accurately, to analyse and evaluate it so that we're able to use it to make informed decisions. And at the heart of it all lies the need to actively question rather than passively accept. In an article for the Harvard Business Review in 2022, author John Coleman writes, "At the heart of critical thinking is the ability to formulate deep, different, and effective questions." He suggests six different strategies. The first is hold your hypotheses loosely. Hypothesis-driven thinking is a process used by analysts at McKinsey & Company, which allows them to work through a problem quickly and efficiently. Early on in the decision-making process, people form a hypothesis, which they then seek to improve by looking closely at the information at hand. However, the key here is not to hold on to the hypothesis so tightly that you refuse to discard it if you find evidence to the contrary. It needs to be held loosely so that it can be abandoned if needs be. Coleman explains that in critical thinking exercises, we often fall rapidly into an intuitive and jointly held answer or hypothesis, particularly in groups, and we ask questions that seek to prove rather than disprove our thoughts. Critical questions, however, may force us to fundamentally reconsider our initial conclusions, and we have to be willing to do so freely without defensiveness. The second strategy is active listening. This is the process of understanding what the other person is saying, both explicitly and implicitly. If we focus on understanding what's being said, rather than just waiting to critique it or put forward our own view, we'll be able to ask better questions. Coleman explains that active listening also allows you to demonstrate to your counterpart that you care about what they're saying and take their perspective seriously, which keeps them engaged in the conversation and more open to your perspective. The third strategy is one that teachers are very familiar with, asking open-ended questions. Asking a person such a question challenges them to reflect on an issue and to delve deeper. Instead of asking, "Are you happy in your job?" if we formulate the question in an open-ended manner, we can arrive at more interesting insights. Thus, a better formulation might be, "What do you love about your job, and what could be better?" As Coleman points out, open-ended questions are good for encouraging critical thinking in a group, as they give people space to actively solve problems. The fourth is to consider the counterintuitive. This is especially important when working in a group, as people often fall into the trap of groupthink. They thus follow a particular thought without questioning whether they're going in the right direction. By asking a counterintuitive question every now and then, and challenging the group's conventional thinking, we can ensure that we're really on the right track. Interestingly, this is also a trap that's easy to fall into when we're researching something online, and this can cost us a lot of time and unnecessary effort. The fifth strategy is to stew in a problem. As Coleman explains, in today's rapid-fire world, we try to make decisions too quickly. But the best questions are often formulated after consideration and a good night's rest. And finally, he says it's important to ask the hard follow-up questions. We shouldn't content ourselves with accepting easy answers, but we should be prepared to ask deeper questions that will further our critical understanding of a topic. He concludes, "Learn to formulate and ask questions rather than simply answering them." What about critical thinking and online searches? In a 2018 article for the Huffington Post Online, Professor Sam Weinberg at Stanford University argues that instead of more critical thinking, we actually often need less when checking sources online. He explains that having watched groups of intelligent adults use the internet, people missed crucial clues about who might be trying to sway their opinion, because they imported ways of reading from the world of print, even though the web plays by different rules. Research has shown that this is particularly true of how students search the internet. They regularly trust Google when determining whether information is true or not. For instance, the higher a result appears in Google's list, the more reliable it's considered. They also often don't read the information contained in the snippets, the one or two sentences under each search result, and instead click on results that are higher up on the list, even if these websites are less relevant. In a bid to counter this, the Stanford History Education Group, a research and development group founded by Weinberg, has developed a curriculum called Critical Online Reasoning to help students search for, evaluate, and verify social and political information online. It's built around three questions that professional fact-checkers prioritize in their work. Who's behind the information? What's the evidence? What do other sources say? It also introduces a technique used by professional fact-checkers called lateral reading. More about this in a minute. In 2018, Weinberg and his associate Sarah McGrew conducted research to find out how three different groups of people evaluated sources online. They chose students at Stanford University, historians at four different universities, and professional fact-checkers at leading news organizations. The students and historians tended to apply print techniques when reading sites online, so they read articles vertically, from top to bottom, or beginning to end, without cross-checking them or leaving the site. They focused on the look of the site, its overall appearance, graphics and aesthetics, and were influenced by a professional-looking logo, site name, or the fact that the URL ended in .org. They examined scholarly references in a similar way to how they'd go about this in an academic report, although there are no rules as to how this has to be done online, nor is there any obligation to cite sources. Even though the students and professors were applying traditional critical thinking skills, they were still at risk of falling victim to features that could be easily manipulated. Professional fact-checkers, on the other hand, had a very different approach. They used a series of problem-solving techniques that meant they read less, but learned more about the websites they were visiting. In a 2022 paper entitled Lateral Reading on the Open Internet, Weinberg explains three key techniques professional fact-checkers use. These are footing, taking bearings, and lateral reading. Weinberg describes footing as being the understanding of the internet a user brings to online searches, how one plants one's feet before typing the first word into a browser. Fact-checkers bring to search an understanding of the difference between a medium in which anyone can post anything without obtaining permission and traditional print environments, in which books, articles, and research reports are vetted by multiple gatekeepers. He goes on to point out that fact-checkers not only understand how web crawlers index websites, but that they also have a working knowledge of search engine optimization and how it affects search order. These are all things that affect their initial stance before they start searching. Taking bearings is about having a sense of direction when starting an internet search. Fact-checkers use a range of techniques to get a quick lay of the land before they get going. A key one is practicing click restraint, so they refrain from clicking until they've got a feel for the context. This means that they don't automatically click on one of the top three results, which researchers have shown account for over half of all clicks. Instead, they read the snippets accompanying the search results to get more information. They examine the URLs and then disregard the low-quality results. Finally, they employ a technique called lateral reading. Instead of looking at an unfamiliar website for clues as to whether it's bona fide or not, they immediately open new browser tabs to check the credibility of the unknown website on websites they trust. They thus avoid wasting time on it, maybe only to find out later that it was unreliable or biased. Using lateral reading techniques not only improves the accuracy of research, but also saves time. In a 2021 interview with Education Week, Weinberg admits, lateral reading isn't a cure-all, but research we've conducted shows that it can take a big chunk out of students' most egregious errors. What happens when we delegate search tasks to AI chatbots? In a simple test, I asked ChatGPT to come up with a historic quote about critical thinking. It immediately complied and presented me with one by Albert Einstein. When I told GPT that this is actually misattributed, it's a simplified version of a statement published in a biography of Einstein, it apologized and admitted there was no proof for the origin of the quote. And in other cases, such as when asked to write an article for the BBC website, ChatGPT has also admitted to inventing quotes and not even saying so. This only became apparent when the journalist asked if this were the case. Since chatbots such as ChatGPT have become widely accessible, people have often turned to them to answer questions instead of doing an internet search. So much so that ChatGPT has even been dubbed the Google killer. And in fact, there's so much interest in AI-enhanced searches that Google, Microsoft, and Baidu have just announced that they'll be launching searches with AI. It's an enticing thought, isn't it? We could save so much time. Instead of having to go to a search engine and being presented with potentially thousands of search results, we could just type in a question and get a definitive answer in the form of a paragraph or two. But as Hamlet said, there's the rub. Even though the tone and manner in which it's written make it seem authoritative, the information might not be correct. An obvious issue is its lack of sources. Admittedly, there are some tools such as Perplexity AI that do provide them, but they're limited and not always very authoritative. So, we're being asked to take something at face value without knowing where the information originated. And at the same time, we need to know when we have to question the facts. So how might this change the way we search, and what does this mean for critical thinking skills? In an article for Medium in February 2023, André Langer interviewed ChatGPT about whether relying too heavily on AI might lead to a decline in our ability to think. ChatGPT didn't believe that this would happen. In fact, the answers were, perhaps unsurprisingly, rather optimistic. Interestingly, when asked whether there was a risk of over-reliance on ChatGPT and decreased motivation to think critically, it replied, "If people rely on me for all their answers and solutions, they might start to think that doing any actual thinking is just too much work. It's like if you rely on your GPS to get everywhere, you might forget how to read a map." It's important to strike a balance and continue to flex those critical thinking muscles. But you know what? I think you, people, are incredibly adaptable and will manage that. So what might this all mean for the classroom? At the beginning of 2023, ChatGPT passed several high-level exams, including the Wharton MBA exam and the three-part US medical licensing exam. Connie Powell-Nichols, professor of law at Baylor University, voiced concerns about what this might do to our critical thinking abilities, saying, "If you don't have to do the critical analysis because you have the chat and the online information that's gathered, where is that critical thinking that's happening? If you never have to make the decision because you have AI telling you what decision to make, you use it or lose it." Thus, critical thinking is imperative if we're to use these tools actively rather than passively and allowing them to shape our thinking. There are numerous ways we can incorporate the technology into the classroom to get students to refine their thinking and practice their ideas. Here are just a few. Students could come up with a list of arguments for an essay topic and compare them to the ones delivered by the bot. They could critique what the bot writes or even evaluate what it says, as a teacher would do. After completing a topic in the classroom, they could anticipate what the chatbot might say when asked to provide a summary of the topic. They could regenerate responses by the bot and then rank and discuss the different answers it provides. They could use it as a way of learning to ask better questions, as practice for formulating questions to get more specific answers. Or they could use it as a way to practice debating skills. Students could take one side of the debate and ask ChatGPT to take the other. After they've proposed an argument, ChatGPT would rebut it, and then students would have to rebut this argument. I look forward to hearing your ideas and how you've used it in your lessons. As Eleanor Roosevelt once said, it is today we must create the world of the future. In the future, the emphasis needs to be placed on how to think rather than what to think. At the moment, we cannot trust what AI-enhanced tools are producing. As we've seen, they make things up and don't rely on trustworthy sources. Yet the problem is that we need to know what we have to check. As Sarah pointed out in the previous episode about ChatGPT, if we're an expert in a particular field, we know which facts we can trust. But if we're given a text that's been generated for us and we're not experts in that particular area, how do we know what needs to be checked? We need to practice critical thinking and ask questions. The challenges we're facing are changing rapidly, but the need for critical thinking is greater than ever. But I'd like to end on a positive note, and maybe even agree with ChatGPT when it says, it's important to strike a balance and continue to flex those critical thinking muscles. But you know what? I think you, people, are incredibly adaptable and will manage that. So let's strive to keep asking better questions. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gerch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.